Well, good morning and welcome to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
And I'm Ken Dilger.
And we are plum tickled to have you along. Hope you're having an outstanding week. I don't know what it's like when you hear this show. We tape them on Mondays. All I will tell you is it's cold outside.
Very cold,
and,
Joe.
We're getting ready to turn our time clocks back. So by the time you hear this, it may even be an hour later and even darker. It is nice that when we wake up, though, that it's daylight. So I hope we get
that
back quickly.
I think
it's next.
Time.
I think it's around the 9th, somewhere around there.
Really?
They said on one of the radio shows on the way in that it's coming up quickly. So it's in the next couple weeks if it's not when you're hearing the show.
Interesting.
If you're a Saturday morning listener. Hey, before I forget, before we go any further, you know, there's so much damage that happens in the world from Mother Nature, whether it be hurricanes or fires or whatever. And at least you get a little bit of a warning most of the time, I think, with them. With tsunamis and tornadoes, not so much. And just our we have families that we take care of down in Alabama. Ken, we have people in 31 states. And seeing 23, at the time of we were taping this, seeing 23 people lose their lives to something coming out of the, just from the wind, just breaks my heart. And I have no idea in Indiana how many people we lost last night to cold, but I have a feeling there's probably more than one out there.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure it got really cold last night.
It was ugly. Walking the dog is an experience at this time of night. But hey, if you're new to Consider This, it's not about weather and it's not about dogs. It is about grace, though, and it is about loving people. We do want to help our neighbors when we can. We are going to talk today a lot about tax. So we're going to do tax planning versus tax reporting and the difference between the two. We're going to talk about Roth contributions versus Roth conversions, what I call the two C's of the R of the Roth word. We're going to talk about reading your return. We finally are getting people coming in with the 2018 tax return completed. Let's just say that it's ugly. you know, when you've spent your entire career looking at it one way, it is different when you have to start looking at a return that looks entirely different. But I want to make sure that you know the differences. And then we're going to talk about silo decisions. In this case, we're going to talk about when you have a 401k and your spouse has a 401k, things that you need to look at. So if you've got a question or comment, you can shoot us an email, considerthis@yourlifeafterwork.com. Don't forget while you're there to get signed up for our market cover. If you want to know what's going on in the economy on a weekly basis, that's the place to get it, yourlifeafterwork.com. Ken and I don't talk much about the market on this show at all. We do answer your financial questions. So if you're looking for a fiduciary, you found the right place. We'll take a break and be right back.
Hi, Joni Michaels here. We know you care about your money, but are you tired of worrying about it? The Financial Enhancement Group takes care of people just like you who don't want to worry about their money. As fiduciaries, the team at the Financial Enhancement Group will care for your nest egg just like they would care for their own if they were in your situation. There are many decisions you'll need to make as you face retirement, and the team at the Financial Enhancement Group is here to help you. Call 800-928-4001 or go to yourlifeafterwork.com to set up a time to meet. The confusion and complexity of retirement is almost as daunting as is the excitement of retirement. Don't let your fear and frustration of taxes and investing derail your retirement. Call the Financial Enhancement Group at 800-928-4001. They'll give you a complimentary second opinion on your strategy for retirement. Begin your adventure in your life after work. Call 800-928-4001 or yourlifeafterwork.com. Now back to Consider This program with Joe Clark.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
I'm Ken Dilger.
So, Ken, you know, there's something about reporting that is just so special when you talk about it. You know, they've taught me in business that, you know, things that are measured do better and things that are measured and reported do tremendously better, right? And I don't know if there's anywhere to compare that in your life or if you've seen that to be true. But I every Monday morning, I get weighed, and I write down, you know, what it is, so that I don't forget, so that I know
do you
week
use,
from
like,
week.
My fitness app or
I've got
like
all
that?
Of those. I'm not very. I use a journal. I'm a full pen focus Michael Hyatt type journal. Well, I'll tell you, if you guys are looking for a journal, I would fully recommend Michael Hyatt's Full Focus Planner. It's $129 a year. You get one each quarter. It works very well for my poor little head. And you're at the age, Ken, you're younger than I am, but you're at the age where you realize time is going by quicker and quicker all the time. You know, we're a third of the way into March, right? Mm-hmm. And that happens because as we get older, we have more experiences. So when you were five, you had about a year and a half to think about, right? You don't think about much before you're 3 and a half, they tell us, memory-wise. Right. So every day was one of 500 days in your life, right? And there's a lot of space. You and I have got a lot of days between
yeah,
our ears.
We do.
So the nice part about having this written down is I'm able to go back over the course of a quarter and relive that quarter, because every day I grade the day and I ask what did I learn. You know, it's got the important things on there. Like today, my big three, we were working on the podcast. I had a planning meeting, working on the budget again, and two radio shows, you know, that I'm taping with my buddy Ken. So, I knew that when I woke up. And so it was able to help get focused on, you know, what was going on. And when I go back at the end of the quarter, which is not very long from now, I'll be able to go back and relive this time that we've had together. Now, it's important to me to be able to relive my quarter. It's also important for you to be able to relive your year. And you, I'm certain at some point in time in your life, you've heard the definition of insanity.
Of course.
And that is when you do the same thing over and over and you expect a different result. And that's what happens almost every year with most people's tax return, right? The year ends, it's December 31st, everything is quiet. It's like all quiet on the Western Front, right? And then April hits and it's no longer quiet on the Western Front. It is now time for you to pay what is owed, or if you're one of those people that get money back, then you're eager to file. But April 15th is the day that what you owe the IRS is due. October 15th is when your reporting is actually due. And so many, many people who end up owing taxes don't even get around to doing it until October 15th.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm a late filer. A lot of K-1s, 1099s coming in.
Yep.
Kind of get everything together and like, I'll just wait. A lot of times I get a refund.
So it's by your own call then?
Yeah, it's by my own call. And my wife's too. Her banana bread business just, she's like, I'll get to it. I'm like, okay, it's October. We got to get it in. I'm going to get it done earlier this year.
Good.
I have a feeling.
You are, because you're going to get poked by somebody else in this room if you don't. Because I really don't care when you report. What I care about, I want you to report on time, but what I care about is doing the tax planning. And the tax planning has to occur before the end of the year, right? So what I want you to put in your head, Ken, is a series of stair steps.
Okay.
And so we're going to climb the ladder. And what happens, and the reason you have to do this by the end of the year, we're going to talk about Roth conversions in a minute. We'll talk about bracket bumping right now, and then we'll give you more detail on the conversions in the next one. But when you look at what your income is, for most people listening to this podcast, you are no longer going to be able to itemize. You're probably going to be taking the standard deduction. That's $24,000 this year that you get to take off. And if you're over 65, that's $1,300 more. So it's $26,600 if you are happen to be married and you're over 65 years old. So there are no more personal exemptions. And for many people, for the first time in their lives, they're going to take the standard deduction. I never have. But your state and property taxes on your what used to be your Schedule A mm-hmm. are limited to $10,000. That's what we call your SALT tax. State and local taxes are capped at $10,000. When you get to mortgage interest, that's changed a little bit. You can now only deduct up to $750,000 worth of debt. And that's, you know, in central Indiana, that's generally okay unless you happen to live in one of the really big houses on Geist. But for most of us, that's all right. Then the charitable contribution is the other big one that is there. And so unless you happen to give over $14,000 a year or have a lot of mortgage interest, odds are you're going to take that standard deduction. So whatever you made, take $24,000 or $26,600 off the top. And that counts your Social Security. That counts everything that you happen to have. And then if you're married filing jointly, about the first $19,000 are going to be taxed at 10%. And then you're going to take a step up. And it's a 20% increase. And then you're going to go up to the 12% bracket, up to about $78,000-$79,000, right in that vicinity. So you can make $100,000 a year as a retiree in Indiana and be in the 12% bracket, right? So that is our goal, by the way, when we have people when they retire, is to try to keep them in that 12% bracket and then use money that they've already paid taxes on for anything they happen to need above that amount of money, because you don't have to pay taxes on money you've already paid taxes on, fortunately, unlike tax deferral. And yes, I did have a gentleman come in the other day that didn't understand why he had to pay taxes on the money coming out of his 401k when he was 70 and a half years old. I will get to explain tax deferral, and you know, it's not that common.
I got a question for you, Joe.
I'm ready.
So if somebody in the last couple of years has an itemized deduction of, say, $15,000,
mm-hmm.
so if they take a $24,000 group deduction or
standard
deduction, they're making out better, correct?
The answer to that would be yes, but remember, in order for the standard deduction to go up, we also lost the personal exemption, right? And where most of the monkey business occurred was what was under miscellaneous expenses, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so miscellaneous expenses are all gone, right?
Okay.
So it's much simpler for the average family to be able to do this now.
Right, but if somebody doesn't have enough to get mm-hmm. to the 24,000,
and now they're taking the 24,
they're doing better off, right?
Well, in theory, right? In theory, now if you add the personal exemptions for a husband and wife together that were $4,000 a pop, right? There's another $8,000 okay. that they were able to deduct before. And you're not getting, quote unquote, getting a $24,000 to standard deduction. If you really had $15,000 you would have gotten, you're now getting a $9,000 deduction, right? The difference between the 15 and the 24. But yeah, for a lot of people, it got simpler. But here's the point. Many people that are listening to this program have seven figures in a brokerage account in an IRA or a 401k, and they happen to be in a marginal tax bracket that is 10 or 12%, and they're not taking the money out because nobody likes to pay taxes, right? And the bottom line is, if you had your 1040 and you showed up at my office, I would teach you to bracket bump. That means take out the last every single dollar that you possibly can outside of that account to be able to pay taxes on it today at a much lower bracket than what you would pay in the future or what your heirs may pay in the future, and move that money to another account. It doesn't mean you have to spend it, but we want to be very, very tax aware of our journey. And remember, we truly are on a financial journey. Hey, you're listening to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark along with Ken Dilger. You got a question or comment, shoot me an email, considerthis@yourlifeafterwork.com, or give us a call, 800-928-4001. We'll be right back. Well, good morning and welcome back to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
And I'm Ken Dilger.
Happy to have you along, Ken. I hope you're enjoying your day and doing wonderful things. And those of you that are listening, I hope you too are enjoying what is happening and going on in your lives. We are going to talk about the opportunity for the old switcheroo, right? So I'd like to come up with a football name for this just because it would be more fun.
The switcheroo.
The switcheroo, right? But what we're going to talk about are the two C's inside of the Roth world, Roth conversions and Roth contributions. They sound so similar, and yet they are so not. They are very, very unalike. So let's start with the Roth contribution first. So Ken, there are two Roth contributions. You may have a 401k
okay.
that allows for contributions to go to the Roth side. Now, if you do, if that's an option in your 401k, and we're up to about 25% of the plans in the country that have that option, no reason for nobody not to have that option, frankly. But about 25% of the population that has a 401k has access to the Roth. Inside of the Roth 401k, it does not matter how much money you make. You can put money into that plan up to the max that you're allowed for your age. So 24 to 26,000, you know, 20 or 18 to 26,000 or 24,000, somewhere in that vicinity. I don't have the numbers right in front of my head, but whatever it is, the max is, you can put in regardless if you make $1 million a year. There is no income restriction. You just have to be a participant in a 401k plan, and they have to have the Roth option attached. Now, the money that you put in, you can choose part of that to go to the Roth, part of it not to go to the Roth. In other words, be tax deferred, which means you have to pay the taxes in the future. The money that the employer puts in, has to be tax deferred. So when you look at my 401k, since I'm one of the partners in the firm, the money that I put in as Joe Clark, the employee, I can choose to put money in the Roth, or I can choose to put money in the tax deferred side. The money that I have to put in for me as the employer, which always cracks me up, has to be tax deferred.
Okay.
Right? But there is no income restriction on it. That's a Roth 401k contribution. Right? Now, a Roth IRA contribution is a little more limited. So it's based on you, one, having earned income, just like the Roth 401k would be. You can't put money into a Roth 401k if you're not working, right? So if you have a Roth IRA, you're contributing money. You have to have earned income this year. But one of the things that people miss is it doesn't have to come from income made this year. So let's say I started January 1st and I had $10,000 sitting in my account for some reason or another. And at the end of 2019, I had made more than $5,500 if I was, or $6,000 now if I was under 50, or $7,000 if I'm over 50. And I'd made $7,000, so I had to pay Social Security taxes on it, right? I can take $7,000 out of that 10 grand that I had sitting around at the beginning of the year, and I contribute it to my Roth IRA, provided, and this is important, that I didn't make too much money. And you'll find that on your adjusted gross income. So the income max this year is somewhere around $194,000, right? And if you make more than that, the deduction or the ability to contribute to a Roth phases out and goes away pretty quickly, right? But for most people in central Indiana, again, they have the opportunity to contribute. And it's important to understand that it doesn't have to be money that you earned this year. So I choose to use that opportunity to be able to help my daughters who do not have 401ks at work yet, right? And give them a matching opportunity. So, Ken, do you remember how much money I can give somebody in my family every year?
$15,000.
And because Barb and I are married, 30. Technically it could be 30, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if I wanted to give money to anybody, if I wanted to give money to Ken, I could give him $30,000. Don't count on it, Ken Dilger, right? But so when it comes time at Christmas at the end of the year, I
give my bonus, right?
I give the girls money for Christmas to deposit into their Roth account, and whatever they add to it, I will match again for them for the end of the year. So if they figure out how to put another $1,000 in it over the course of the year, then I'll give them an extra $1,000, you know, to be able to go in so that they can max it out. And ideally, I'm trying to kill two birds with one stone. Now, I was actually had another hidden agenda earlier. The first one, though, is I want them to learn the power of compound interest and what it looks like to invest. I want them to see statements, understand what the things go up and down and how that looks. Secondly, I want them to be able to get Roth IRAs where they're able to get Roth IRAs. The government could take that away, or their incomes could get too high where they weren't eligible for it. The third was, remember, with a Roth contribution, you can always get your money back, right? So with a Roth conversion, we're going to get to in a second, that's not the case. But with a Roth contribution, that's money you've already paid taxes on. You're not getting a deduction this year, and it is deemed basis. It's money that you've put in after tax. So let's say you put in you're under 50, so you put in the $6,000 this year for you and your wife. You got the 12 grand in. And all of a sudden, you need something out. If you need something, you could pull the $12,000 out without penalty if you wanted to.
Within that same current year?
Within the same current year, next year, year after.
Oh, really? So there's no timeline?
No, your basis continues to add. So what I was doing with my daughter before she got married was I was putting money in her Roth IRA, because after doing this for 31 years, what I've noticed is children tend to spend their parents' money more than they're willing to spend their own, right?
That is so true.
And so if I were you, knowing that I had a daughter at IU, who probably will get married at some point in time, I would be putting money in her Roth IRA, telling her that that is part of her wedding, so that you are pre-funding the wedding expense, and tell her when it comes time for her for the wedding, if she wants to buy a wedding dress that is reasonable, then daddy will pay for that too. If, on the other hand, she wants to buy something that is entirely unreasonable, that's going to have to come out of an account that has her name on it.
Right? Gotcha. Let me ask you this, Joe. What is the minimum somebody has to make to file taxes?
There is it used to be like $750. I don't know what that minimum is anymore. But there are a lot of people who don't file because they would get a refund mm-hmm. because of all the credits. They just don't take the time to do it. And if you don't owe, you don't have to go through the process. All right. Now the Roth conversion is an entirely different beast. A Roth conversion is when you have money inside of your IRA and you decide that you want to move that into a Roth IRA. So this is not a contribution. This one is not limited by age, nor is it limited by income. So you hear me talk a lot about the change that occurred starting in 2010. The IRS notified us in 2007 you could do this, but it gives you the ability to take money out of your IRA and convert it to a Roth IRA. There's no penalty, Ken, but you do pay the taxes on that money this year. And people ask me, they said, you know, so at what age is this right for people? And I think my record is a 92-year-old. Again, it's depending on your tax bracket, right, where you are. Think about what we talked about in our first conversation. And if you missed that, remember, you can go to yourlifeafterwork.com to hear it, or you can go to consider this program wherever you listen to podcasts, put in the state, and you'll be able to listen to that conversation over again. But make sure that you're maxing out the bracket. And that's one of the tricks. We'll get to this probably next week where we talk about to convert or not to convert. So that'll just be a teaser for you right now. Give us a call, 800-928-4001. Ken and I'll take a break. We'll be right back in just a second. Well, good morning and welcome back to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
And I'm Ken Dilger.
Ken, when you go to bed at night, do you read books?
Yeah, I do.
Do you? Good yep. for you. In bed or in a chair?
In bed for a little bit. Not very often.
I've never figured out how to do that.
But I've got a book by my bookstand.
Well, I've got books.
Or nightstand, I guess you call
it. I've got books, kid. I've got thousands of books. And, you know, we're working on my book right now, and it's interesting. The percentage that they estimate ever get read, you know, is far less than you would like to know. And I've got a lot of best friends that are New York bestsellers, and they try to remind me as I work on my book that it's called bestseller, not best written, right? And yeah, you know, some of the things that I read, you know, that they've made the bestseller list are just not very good, but they are bestsellers and people buy them, and I guess there's a reason they don't read them. So, have you ever read your tax return?
Yes.
And what do you? Well, now, wait a minute. Don't say of course, because you're one of the very few people that have ever said yes to me.
I read a lot of people's tax returns, Joe's.
Well, you read a lot of people's tax returns from debt to income ratio and from what
I
their deduction is.
Schedule C's and
yeah,
attachments
you have to
K-1s
file all
of that
good
stuff.
Ken's a mortgage broker, and so yes, he
mortgage lender, not a broker.
Mortgage lender. Lender.
There's a big difference.
Go ahead and tell me what.
So a broker represents many different companies. So, and a lender represents their own company, and it funds in a different fashion.
I guess I knew that. I just kind of forgot. You know, it's one of those things. Part of life. Oh well. Anyhow, so Ken reads tax returns, which is a beautiful thing. And what I want you to do is to be able to read your tax return. So, when I wake up in the morning as a fiduciary, and remember, for the majority of you listening to this program, you are your own fiduciary. If you're working with a broker who sells you products, then you are most likely not working with a registered investment advisor, or you're working with a registered investment advisor who has to tell you when they're functioning under suitability as opposed to an RIA side. But you're most likely acting as your own fiduciary. And the simple definition of that is legally I'm required to treat your money as if it were my money and we were in the same situation. So when I wake up in the morning, the way I look at 950-plus families and a little over $400 billion, I have four key areas that I focus on. So the first is risk and volatility. So after I'm done with my reading, I turn on the CNBC and see where we are in terms of the market feelings for that day. The second thing is the fees and expenses. So my CFA and my chartered market technician and my allocation team spend a lot of time making sure that we figure out ways to reduce trading costs, internal fees, expenses, anything that we can do to make the returns better because the fees and expenses are lower. The third are taxes, but it's taxes both today and tomorrow. And I want to help people understand that they're on a financial journey. The fourth is real return, making sure that you get something above zero plus inflation. So that reading of that return is very, very critical in terms of how you do it. So looking at your 2017 return, remember that is entirely different than the 2018 return. Looking at the 2017 return, you've got the column that is going to show what your earned income is. You've got and that used to be on line 7, and that's Ken when we were talking about what your daughter made during the break. That's mm-hmm. that's where that earned income would right. go. Best way to understand that is that if you paid into Social Security, that's typically where the income's going to show up, right? You're not a self-employed employee at that point in time. When we go to the bottom of page 1, if that number, and this again is your 17 return, if that number is different than your line 7, then it means you had dividend income, interest income, capital gain income, real estate income. You may or may not be on Social Security already. The Social Security part gets to be a little confusing because in the old 17 return, you will notice that you recorded that number in the middle of the page, so about 2/3 of the way down where it says Social Security. You put the number in the middle. And then you go to the side to talk about how much of that is taxable. The reason for that is very simple. The maximum amount of your Social Security that's taxable is 85%, and it depends on what your other income is. So if you're living on Social Security income, you may not pay much in tax at all on your Social Security money. The more money you make, however, the more it's going to be taxed. Once we got there, we would turn the page over. And then you go down. And that's going to tell me whether or not you take the standard deduction, which we talked about earlier in this program. And remember, if you missed that, you can go to download our podcast where you can hear this conversation again. It's Consider This Program. You do have to put in the word program. Anywhere you listen to a podcast, you can get it. And we do put other stuff up there from time to time. So please make sure you go subscribe when you can and get a chance. You can also go to our website at yourlifeafterwork.com. But when you look at your tax return and you've got that standard deduction number, so for 2018, it would be $24,000 if you're under 65, as much as $26,600 if you were over 65, if two of you were. You're going to look there to see if you took the standard or the itemized deduction. And as I said, many people will be taking the standard deduction now going forward. Unless you have to be a big charitable giver, the probability in Indiana is that you are going to be doing the standard. You could take the itemized, and that's where you had the Schedule A that came into play. I remember a lot of changes that took place there, but I am really going to miss the Schedule A and the miscellaneous deductions being gone because I read the presidential tax returns every year and make a big deal out of a couple of the mistakes that I have seen the people that are in the White House make who clearly have the buying power to have the best minds working for them, but it is the difference between tax planning and tax reporting. You know, if you do something before you talk to your financial advisor, your CPA, whoever it is in your life that's trying to help you navigate the craziness, you know, if you do something, you sometimes are trapped with the end results, and that happens on the tax returns every now and then, again, from people as high up as in the White House. But line 43 on the old return is going to tell us what our taxable income is. And when you read that, Ken, you're going to, when your CPA prints it off and you look somewhere on the front page, not of the actual 1040, but in their work stuff, they're going to tell you what your effective tax rate was. And the effective is what you pay on an average dollar that you earned, right? So okay. You earned $100,000. They divide it with between the taxes that you owed. And that tells you your effective rate. When we do tax planning, we always want to talk about the marginal rate. And the marginal rate is the rate that that last step that you were taxed on. So think about the stair steps again. It's the last dollar was taxed at that rate. That's your marginal rate. And that's critical to know when we're doing financial planning, because if we're adding income to your return, that's the rate it's going to be taxed at, because we just added income to your taxes. If we took income away, that's how much we saved, because we're pulling stuff off. So when we do bracket bumping or double stacking or any one of the multiple tax planning strategies that we incorporate at the Financial Enhancement Group, we want to be able to look at you and say, Ken, that saved you this amount of money. That's why we want to use that 12% bracket when we can. Hey, you're listening to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark along with Ken Dilger. Go to our website, yourlifeafterwork.com. Check us out. If you want to do this on your own, God bless. If you're looking for a fiduciary, we are here for you. Give us a call. We'll take a break and be right back. Well, good morning and welcome back to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
And I'm Ken Dilger.
And we are very, very thankful to be able to be here inside with heaters. you know, we are warm in our building. And I just have to tell you, I know of people who are enduring this cold. And I'm grateful to be able to have the infrastructure that we have. Saw some animals out last night that probably shouldn't have been out, which always kind of concerns me a little bit. But hopefully spring will spring and we will be into warmer weather. So this is conversation number 5 for this show. If you are a new listener, not all stations get to hear all of the conversations. If you would like to hear the rest of them or one of them over again, you can go to anywhere you listen to podcasts, whether that be iTunes or Downcast or any of those, and type in Consider This Program and subscribe while you're there, and you'll automatically get anything that we do. It'll give you the opportunity to be able to download show notes and things of that nature. If you like listening to it via the radio, obviously we're across the country, a little over 30 different stations on a weekly basis, but based right here in the Hoosier state of good old Indiana. So in the fifth conversation, we always have a recap. So Ken, we talked about tax planning versus tax reporting. What were your thoughts? Anything that come out of there that's going to change your life forever?
No, not really, but just be curious to see what your marginal or effective tax rate is.
No, marginal.
Well, I know that, but still.
The effective rate you can do in your head.
Of course.
Right? And it's always funny to me that CPAs always talk about the effective rate. And in all fairness, when we talk about the three phases of finance, the three different stages, accumulation, preservation, and distribution, one of the things that I talk about in distribution as a goal is the tax rate you pay on the average dollar you withdraw. Right? Now, that's not the tax rate that you pay on everything on your return. It's on what you're withdrawing out of your investment accounts, whether they be tax-deferred or not tax-deferred, because we want to keep that rate low. But when you do tax planning, you're paying attention to a marginal return, right? That's the last step that you step on. And so when you go in and look at it, it won't tell you what your marginal rate is. On some worksheets it does. Most of them it doesn't. It will tell you what you pay tax on, which is line 43 on your 17 return or 16 return. And then you look at where the tax brackets are, and it will tell you what that marginal rate was. So anywhere from nothing, first step is 10%, all the way up to 39.6 in 17. Today it's down to 37%, which most people would say sounds very, very high. Does it sound high, Ken? 37%?
Compared to where we were years ago, no.
There you go. Good answer. Good answer. When Reagan took office in 1980, it was 70%. When Kennedy took office, it was 90, right? So since 1913, when they had the first return, the average is a little over 50% a year on the top end. So I definitely believe that there's probably going to be an increase at some point in time, unless economically we can figure out how to cover it. So the second conversation was Roth conversions versus Roth contributions. Remember, a contribution is what you put in based on the income that you made that year, but it doesn't have to be income you made that year. And we use the example of me giving money to my daughters. If they earned income, and if your grandchildren or somebody that's close to you in your life doesn't have has a job and they have income and they have withholdings that come out of that income from because they're W-2 employees. And maybe they're just working at McDonald's or Wendy's. Maybe they've got a job. My first ones that had taxes taken out of it were detasseling corn. You never let anybody do that. Of course, they tell me they don't do it quite the way that I did it when I was 12, getting on a bus with a bunch of much older people. You go to bed at night and see green. Anyhow, we get back on the horse here. The bottom line is you can do a contribution with money that you didn't make that year as long as you had earned income that year. A conversion then is when you take money that's an existing IRA and you convert it into a Roth. So there's no penalty, but you do pay taxes and there is no longer any income requirements. And I asked Ken at night if he went to bed reading books, and he said he has a book on his nightstand. I too have books. So here's my problem, Ken. I love to read, but I keep everything on my Kindle, which is my iPod or my iPad. And there is just too much bloody research that you should not see those blue screens anywhere near going to bed. So at nine o'clock, they shut down. And then I find myself being it's difficult to read. So I've got books laying around that I try to read, but the technology in this world today, there's one, and I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it right. It's readiness or readiness.
Mm-hmm.
And when I highlight something on my Kindle, once a week, I get a summary of the books that I've read over the last year, and it will send me five things that I highlighted out of different books, which just kind of takes you back a little bit. It sends me a thing, asks me at the beginning of the year how many books you plan on reading. Of course, you never hit the objective, right, because there are more things to do.
Of course.
But, I learned a long time ago that readers are leaders, and I intend to spend as much of my time reading as I can. Most people don't spend any time reading their tax return. And that's what we talked about in the third conversation today. So if you've got if you get your tax return out, we had somebody come in this last week that didn't bring it. And I looked at him and I said, listen, you don't have to do anything here at the Financial Enhancement Group. We take care of people who don't want to worry about their money. But if you're talking to anybody else about your money and they don't want to see your tax return, you're talking to the wrong people. In 31 years of being in this industry, I have never seen anything separate people from their retirement more than the Internal Revenue Service. And it's not because the IRS are bad people. They lay out the rules. It's just people don't pay attention. They don't understand the rules. And generally, you don't do the planning that you ought to be doing by the end of the year. And it's just people just don't get around to it. Ken, you talked about, your wife having to bake when it gets close to the period of time of the year when you want to slow down. I get it, right? But the problem is that's when we have to do the tax planning.
I get it.
I get a lot of pushback here from people going, it's the holidays. Yeah, well, we have families to take care of. And, when December 31st hits, it hits. So we start hitting the world pretty hard from the tax planning side when you get to about the first week in November is when we send out our tax package. And then last but not least, we talked about the silo decisions, one-off decisions that you make financially that really need to incorporate the rest of your financial life. Social Security, when you take it, whether you invest in your 401k, your spouse's 401k, or both, how you mix up the asset mix. There are a lot of those different decisions that are out there that you really need to be able to combine and kind of put in a tandem, if you will, so that they're working together, not against each other. And again, Social Security is one of those largest decisions. So if you've got something you'd like to hear us talk about, shoot us an email. Consider this at yourlifeafterwork.com. Go to the website, yourlifeafterwork.com, get signed up for our market carver, or give us a call, 800-928-4001. Have a great week, my friends.